G'day and welcome to the Car Expert Podcast. There is a language warning for this episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Car Expert Founders Podcast. One of the last ones that we recorded was on our first full throttle trip, and what we thought we'd do is cover the second full throttle trip. Yes, it happened again, despite learning during the first one why we shouldn't do it. Elvors and Tony, how are you guys?
Hey,
good, man. How are you?
Yeah, good. Look, this happened. It was really my fault because
It was 100% your fault.
It was. I was under the impression that we've driven the Veyron, we've driven the first DBS, we've driven the Lambo, so we really had to follow this up with something even better. And what better way to sort of go out than drive, like, to get a collection of 10 of the world's fastest cars? And we had everything lined up from the Gumpert, Apollo. Like, this was shit that no one had seen. Barely driven, and this was some seriously fast stuff. And we've got to thank a guy called Thomas Ullmann. He was a German tuner based in Australia, and I've forgotten how we got onto him, but he lined up 9 of the world's fastest cars from the likes of Techart, Novatech, just a whole bunch of amazing cars. And I'll let our boys sort of take it from there for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's worth pointing out that, as Paul said, having done the first trip, I actually think was definitely worth doing and was certainly a success. However, the second trip was in the middle of a GFC. I think the company...
Good habit of doing this, don't
you? Yeah, the company was pretty much broke. I think we were at some stage days away from being insolvent. And yet Tony was planning to go overseas and drive the 10 fastest cars, which of course I agreed to because, you know, what a fucking great idea. And if you were going to go out, we may as well go out in style, right? Like what a great way to do something. So, and also I don't know if you remember, Tony, but we actually had a distribution deal to make a DVD and release this.
Yeah, that was that Richard Sheffield. Was it? Was it him?
Yeah, from memory, I think that was his name. But yeah, we had a whole process plan where we were going to go overseas, record all this, because we had such success with the first one with Discovery Channel and everything. And we thought we may as well make this like a TV show or something, you know. Yeah. Like, anyway, so I guess then started the process of planning these cars. I actually, you know, we talked about this earlier in the day before the podcast. I actually forgotten just how many cars we had. It was like an endless list of shit that we ended up driving. It was crazy.
It was insane. And we got some sponsorship this time, thankfully, but seemed like it didn't happen because I lost half my fucking equity in this.
can we set the scene? Which year was this?
2009. Yeah.
2009. Okay. So back then, I guess the internet was still very young in terms of car websites. So this was still at a time before all the major sort of social media sites were kicking off. All of these cars were still relatively unknown as well. It's not like today where you get some influencer with 3 million followers go and drive a Techart car and then it's sort of out there on the internet. So you guys were planning this. I wasn't involved in this because I saw
sensibly
the writing
so on the wall. Sensibly so.
So I think you did your best to stop it, Paul, from memory.
I must say that had I have stopped it, you both would be far richer than you are today. But that's another story.
It's actually true. I think we genuinely would have lost roughly 10% of the company in this trip by
100%.
Not having it well sorted, not having the finances ready. We had one of our sponsors pull out, if you remember, Tony, Nitro Energy.
That Olympic swimmer that was on featured on 60 Minutes for ripping off a number of people, including you and I for 10 grand.
It wasn't much. It was 10 grand, but that 10 grand cost us equity, which was worth millions later. It was crazy shit.
10 million. If you go by the 10% that you lost in equity, it's a total of sort of $10 million over the sale price
towards the end. Yeah. It was. And again, I guess it was one of those trips where we did it not because it made logical sense, but because we're car people and we really fucking wanted to do it.
Yeah, this Thomas Ullmann lined up these cars. I mean, let's talk about the first car. So we get there, we hire the cheapest fucking car we could afford.
Where's there? Where did you guys start?
Well, Ford, we flew into, I think it was Frankfurt, And originally, we'd planned to drive this Spanish supercar called an IFR Aspid. Paul, I don't know if you've ever heard of this thing, but
I'm Googling it right now.
Yeah, it was some amazing car that we were talking about it later on with another guy that gave us his car, and I was telling the guy, virtually spieling the spruiking the PR lines that this car had that was faster than in this section of a rally championship course, that was faster than Sebastian Loeb. And the guy just looked at me with a straight face, this giant German guy, and he just said, "Bullshit, Tony." And I just sort of looked at our boys and thought, okay. I was like 6'4" and like a Viking. And he just called it out. He just said, "Bullshit." And, I just sort of had to cop that one.
I'm looking at pictures of it now. So the 2008 IFR Aspid. It's got like
the thing, just to paint the picture, every fucking place we went to, it doesn't matter who we were having dinner with, doesn't matter what, Tony would talk about the IFR Aspid and tell them how it was quicker than Sebastian Loeb. And everybody just sat there silently and took the bullshit, except for that German guy who just went, "Bullshit."
But listen, we got to Frankfurt, we hired a Ford Focus wagon, and bear in mind, this time we took a crew. We took a really good videographer, as you know, Paul Carl, and we took George Skenzos, and I think George has gone on to bigger and better things as well. And George was the second camera, and also a help in moving cars around and that sort of stuff. So we were really armed to the teeth with a five-man crew, as it were. And we all piled in with luggage and camera gear to this Ford Focus wagon. And I just remember driving at about 190 on a fucking cold night, pissing rain, and everyone's asleep, and I'm doing like 190 thinking. All I'm thinking is if I lose control of this car, I slide, we're all fucked.
I would have taken all your equity.
Yeah. Well, look, and we were heading to a really unusual car, which I don't think any of us had ever heard of before, the Viessmann MF5, V10 powered M5 engine in this English looking old school Morgan style vehicle, our boys. What you know, like,
yeah, there was two of them. There was the Viessmann, I'm just actually Googling it as we're talking, MF5 and MF3, was it? I think there was two
of
them.
Yeah, the MF5 was the big, the V10, which was the really expensive. I think they were like literally 300,000 euro, and they had a most amazing factory, which was in the shape of a gecko lizard in the north of Germany. And I mean, we got there, and this was a really professional organization set up with all these stages where they did leather and interior and engine work and gearbox work. And
we did a full, I guess, so a lot of you probably, we should probably answer this at the very beginning. A lot of you probably wondering where the fuck all this footage and all this content is. The sad thing is we actually never put it all together. And we'll explain sort of throughout the story how we didn't. But we were the first people allowed to film inside that Viessmann factory. And it was a big factory. And we did a full factory tour with one of the Viessmann brothers. Yeah. And it was amazing. And then they gave us two cars to drive out. And I don't know if you remember, Tony, this is the bit where we went to that airport where that German guy was yelling at me. Was that the Viessmann? I think it was.
It was pissing down with rain. Like literally, we had this fucking car that was rear-wheel drive and virtually towy as a fucking racing car, and that thing was sliding all over the place. I think we were doing like 250 down.
The only footage of that is me sliding into the grass.
Yeah.
The only footage of me is Carl, the videographer, saying, "Do you mind just doing a couple of swerves while I film this?" I was like, "Sure." A couple of swerves. Second swerve, the car lost its rear, and I just went flying off the track.
It was like pirouetting like a ballerina on the grass, not stopping.
I'm thinking, fuck, this is not a good start to this trip.
And let me paint the picture, because we literally had no cash. We were living on a credit cards. There was no food. So I think we arrived there. It was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, begging for food. And like a vision came this German guy with a bag of bread rolls. And it was like luxury just having a bread roll and a drink. And then we were trying to wash the car, I think, for photography. and then you were using some guy's house that was bordering the airport, and he came out in like another massive German. They're all fucking big.
Mate, this guy. Let me tell you. The car was filthy. That one of the Weismans was filthy, and I thought, oh, Carl said, can you just go and give it a wipe down? I drove around. I found this hose. It's like, I didn't realize it wasn't part of the airport. It was just adjacent property, and I'm standing there. I'm hosing this car down, right? And this big, I swear he was like 7.5 feet tall. He was the most giant human being I'd ever seen, and he was a big guy. He came out, and he was just frothing at the mouth, yelling at me. I'm thinking, I'm going to get fucking eaten here. And I just, somewhere after the first 30 seconds of his yelling, I just went, I'm sorry, I only speak English. And he just went, English, and then just started fucking swaying again in German, I imagine. It wasn't until the guy from Wiesbaden showed up to calm him down. I actually thought I was going to die. There was a moment of fear in my eyes that I was actually going to die there.
I thought it was the funniest fucking thing on earth.
He just kept yelling, English. And I was like, yes, I speak English, sorry. Fuck, that was hilarious. But those cars, man, they were terrible to drive. Hey, I got to say.
They were in the wet. I mean, they were a fucking handful. But in the dry, they were virtually like the steering lock to turn a corner was literally like 10 degrees. I thought they were quite amazing cars. They were literally hand-built. And do you remember we saw the guy when we were shooting the tech art at that castle? That guy arrived in the Wiesbaden that we'd actually done that thing like 2 weeks before.
Oh, did he?
And yeah, we actually saw it, what it was like in the wild. I think those guys went under a few years later or shortly after.
2014. I'm just having a look now.
I heard recently they were being revived, but I'm not sure if that's too. True.
I admire those guys that start these bespoke car companies, but in the end of the day, it's so fucking hard to survive when you got the likes of the Volkswagen group that seem to own every other performance car manufacturer in the world. I mean, it's just so hard, right? Is it worth doing these days, that sort of thing? I would have to say no.
Yeah. Well, so I think the first part of the trip, though, I think it actually started with that Veritas, Tony. I think that's the first car. Was that the first car we drove, or was that the second car we drove?
It was definitely the Wiesbaden.
The Wiesbaden, right. Okay.
Then we BMW had really kindly given us an M5. Thank fuck, because we piled all the crew guys into that fucking Focus, and you and I to basically go racing on the Autobahns. And let me just say, anyone that would have a go, we're more than prepared to take them on. And
oh, I don't know, man. Do you remember? I remember driving. We were doing 260, and that's when the M5 capped out. And these Porsche guys that were testing the original Panamera just casually drove past us and waved. Do you remember they waved at us?
And that was like a prototype.
That was before the first Panamera came out. It was amazing.
So that was an E60 M5, the V-turn one.
That's correct. Yeah.
Look, we actually picked that press car up after the Wiesbaden. So it was for the Ford Focus, and then we I remember.
Hang on, you got to tell them the story of how we picked that car up and what happened to you, Tony.
Yeah, that's what I'm. You tell that story, because we then had to drive to Munich. At I don't know why we were there at fucking midnight or something.
Prior to that, with that Ford Focus, we were driving to our accommodation. And the car was showing we had like 30 kilometers left, if you remember. Yes. And I refused to pull over to fill it up. Because
mate, the fucking thing's empty. Let's get fuel.
And I kept saying, there's never been a car where these things don't have at least 50 Ks in them by the end. Let's just get to the hotel. I'll fill it up tomorrow. Anyway, we were like 3 kilometers from the hotel and the car just turned off. And then these motherfuckers made me walk out of the car and go to a petrol station. It was like minus 15, and get some fuel and come back. Do you remember that?
I remember, and that's probably why we were really late getting to that hotel. And then we had to leave. I'm pretty sure we left at like 9 p.m. to pick up. And thankfully, that BMW place was a giant building in just outside of Munich that was open 24/7. And I'll let you explain what happened when we picked that car up.
Yeah, so Tony and I went to pick up this M5, and as Tony said, BMW actually have a dedicated press pickup center, which is enormous, and it's open 24 hours, and there's a guy always there, so you can go and pick up a car and drop off a car anytime, which is just phenomenal. Anyway, we showed up to this place, and it's pitch black, right? And Tony only had if you imagine the size of a Woolworths car park, like a really big Woolworths car park, there was nothing in the Woolworths car park except one other car and Tony. And Tony reversed into it at like 40 k's an hour. I shit you not, I have never seen anyone hit another car backwards at that speed in my life. And then the first thing he says is like, why didn't you motherfuckers tell me there was a car there? You're the one driving.
But I got it. I was lucky in a number of instances, but this was the first. And I got out thinking, holy fuck, what have I done? And there was not one fucking ounce of damage to not only the Focus, but also this classic Mercedes-Benz, I believe it was. It's probably Benz is probably worth hundreds of thousands now, but hopefully I never looked under it because I didn't either.
I have a feeling that there's no way that those cars weren't damaged. There would have been some damage. It was literally pitch black. You could not see shit.
And I was just sort of reversing back at quite a rapid anyway.
I was actually crying from laughter at that point, I'm pretty sure.
I remember we got back to the hotel. It would have been like 2 a.m. and we had to be up early the next day. We came out of that hotel and the fucking we had to be there at a specific time. I remember we were panicking and that fucking Focus wouldn't start. Evidently, we had made too much noise for the Germans coming in that late at night. And someone had actually removed the distributor cap.
Oh, my God.
And because we were wondering, okay, well, why the fuck isn't it kicking over? Anyway, we don't even know. The car was still locked. We have no idea how they got into the bonnet to remove the distributor cap.
I'm pretty sure those Focuses, you opened the bonnet by pulling the Ford logo off the front and there was like a keyhole there.
Shit.
Ah, yeah. I didn't know that. That literally solved a 15-year mystery for us.
See, this is what happens when you test stuff that isn't just supercars.
So then we arrived in the place where the Volkswagen tuner called ARP, ABT. We'd actually not heard of it before. This German guy, Thomas, had told us about ARP and said they tune all their race cars and they turn normal Audi, performance Audis, into fucking monsters. Right, our boys? We're fucking monsters.
I think they gave us an RS5 and an R8, if I remember correctly.
And that fucking insane R32.
That's right. The M5. Yeah, that R32 was beating the M5 on the straights, which we actually thought was hilarious.
Well, no, George was in the M5 and we were in the R32 and we thought, hurry the fuck up. What are you doing? And this, he said, I can't catch you guys.
I'm actually amazed that we let George drive anything because he and he's probably listening to this. I'm going to have to send him a link, but he was one of the most incompetent drivers I have ever put behind the wheel of a vehicle.
Let me just jump forward to that fucking tech art where he's trying to park the KN or the Panamera. I'm not sure what it was. KN, I think. And the fucking guy has taken 20 moves to parallel parking outside of the restaurant, and this is before we'd actually been given a deck card. So me and our boys are thinking, these guys must wear a complete fucking bunch of Muppets. And they can't park the car, and we're giving them 1,000 horsepower GT2 RS that's been worked on with like 1,010 newton meters and 1,000 horsepower. And the guys can't even fucking park the car.
He literally spent about 20 minutes trying to put this guy into the car park. And we're all just pretending, chit-chatting, waiting for him to finish. No one wanted to say anything. Oh, it was hilarious. But, yeah, so we got to Apt, and that's where you got to know what's the guy that used to run the Apt?
That's Florian.
Yeah.
And now he's head of Hyundai PR in Europe.
That's right. He's moved a long way up. Yeah. So that was amazing. They were really nice guys. Hey, that was honestly up until that point, I think that R8 was the best handling car I have ever driven.
It was unreal. Like I remember taking some PRs for drives down a sort of a twisty road to an Austrian ski village on the other side of the border and cold tires, cold afternoon, and this thing had so much grip. Literally, we were running down super bikes that were just too slow for this car. And if you remember, that wasn't the excitement. The big excitement was that somehow Florian got onto that colonel at the army base, and we've driven the Arbdin, and we got saluted by the guy at the gate. It was fucking amazing. And this colonel said, "I'll let you drive around if I can drift this car around the tanks." So this mad German colonel took the R8 by the scruff of the neck, with Florian from up there giving his acceptance of it. And I was just fucking drifting this R8 at warp speed around fucking army tanks. And then he says, "Oh, guys, why don't we go and do a drag race between the M5 and the R8 at the fucking tank firing range?"
It was honestly, you couldn't write the movie because no one would believe you. But we were at a fucking German army base with tanks and a colonel and two supercars. It was just, it was like the most weirdest thing. And these just complete idiots from Australia had no idea what they were doing. One of the other things we set out to do really early in this full throttle trip, one of our goals was to get every car to 300 k's an hour.
Yeah.
We realized just how much that worked with the Veyron in the first trip and how much people love speed, especially in Australia, where if you go like 150, people think you're a lunatic. So if you do 300, they must think you've come back from the grave because there's no way you'd survive doing that, right? And the R8 was actually the only car we managed to do it in, if you remember, Tony. I was the 300 king.
You got it from memory to 321. I saw that.
321. Yeah, that video had over 1 million views on YouTube.
Go watch that video because it sounds like Elbors is getting a hand job under the table. He's squirming and sort of he's got these weird noises that come out of his mouth. It's very bizarre.
Let's point out to the listeners that this wasn't no ordinary R8. So Christian Arpt, one of the owners of Arpt Tuning, is indeed, I think he's won the 24-hour Nürburgring race. This guy was a serious touring car driver. And this car, now you recall the original R8 was a naturally aspirated V8, right? So this had two superchargers bolted onto it. But not only that, it was just the most marvelously balanced, whatever the engineering work that they'd done, it was all in perfect sync, perfect power delivery. And that car, our boys, was probably the easiest fast car we'd ever driven, right?
Yeah, it wasn't just straight line speed. It, as I said before, I actually think it was one of the best handling cars I have still driven to date. Whatever they'd done to the suspension of that car was, around corners, we went up some really tight, twisty stuff, and I've never felt so at ease with a car that just, you could just push it so hard into a corner and it just kept going.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't recall. You'd have to go to a GT3 RS to even get near the level of grip and, the feeling of being so easy to drive at high speed and they were really twisty corners, guys, and as I said, it was a cold afternoon and I looked at the tires, they were well and truly fucking shot. That was just the start of the trip, and we thought, "Fucking, how much better can this get?"
Yeah. So what did we do? Veritas after that?
No, I think we went to Alex Zillinger, who had organized. He was the engineer that was building the Veritas RS3 and that Brabham
BT92,
like fucking Hercules of M3s. And it was all the trouble they later had with the Brabham name, and there was a big court cases going on, I think, when we were driving that. But look, the biggest thing with that car before we got in the Veritas, because the Veritas was like the bonus. This BMW was a worked over M3 with a lot of engineering in it. And I just remember Al Bors during a photo shoot. Just picture this, folks. He's driving around this amazing looking M3. Blue with these carbon, and I do mean one-off bespoke carbon wheels. Mind you, the car was already sold, and I remember our boys not looking at where he's going. He's looking at the camera to see if the camera's got him. And I hear this bing, and that thing, our boys rightly said, "What's that?" And I said, "I'll tell you what it fucking is. It's the fucking carbon spoke off that bespoke wheel." Is into the fucking forest. And our bull fucking froze, pulled the car over, and all he said to me was, fucking car is cursed, I don't want to drive it. And just when he clipped the gutter with a European smog, just when he clipped it and that ping sound came, I saw Alex on the phone and his jaw dropped and the bloke went white. Like he was. And then our boss was pulled over and says, what will I do? And I said, well, fuck, we'll never find it. So we came back, and then I was on the phone to Michael Schick, the tall German who told us bullshit before. And he says, Anthony, I told you you're the only one to drive the car. And he was fucking furious. And I thought, well, there goes the Veritas RS prototype. We'll never get a go in that. But we end up doing that, our boys.
We went to dinner with him, and I think that was honestly, there's a couple of moments in my life where every time I think about it, it pains me. That's certainly really, really high up there. You have to be in my top three. And I just remember when that happened, I actually just wanted to crawl under a bed and not get out. It was such a terrible, that's honestly the most damage I've ever caused to any car. And it was literally just the tiniest curbing, but it just happened to be on one of the world's first carbon fiber wheels. Like now, obviously they're quite common, you know, with brands like Carbon Revolution making them just actually in Victoria. But back then these were handmade, and I think the set was about 45,000 euros.
Thankfully,
it was something fucking extraordinary. And yeah, I mean, I fucked them. I fucked two of them. It wasn't just one. I'm pretty sure I fucked both of them. Both on one side.
Yeah, I think so. And hopeless. Fortunately, Paul, that car wasn't sold with those wheels, apparently, which is what saved us. Otherwise, I think we would have been literally
up for a bill.
Yeah, or taken into the forest deep and not come out.
But into the Black Forest. That's right.
Yeah, look he we did have dinner with him, and then we kind of smoothed it out, and eventually we were laughing about the incident. And we actually drove 1,000 Ks to Lake Garda in Italy because he said, I haven't got the car here, but I'll have it next week. So we actually met him at how do we do it in those days before NAV almost? Like, we actually met him at a pinpoint at Lake Garda, and they had brought this car down, the 1,000 Ks on the back of a truck, and had wheeled it off at Lake Garda on a Saturday, I believe, because there was a fucking crowd there that I couldn't believe to check out this car. And explain what it was, that car, our boys.
Which car was it? I need to Google
that's
this.
That's the Veritas RS3.
It's honestly one of the coolest looking fucking cars I have ever driven. And it wasn't really a car. It's like, imagine like a 1970s style F1 open sort of face.
Hold on. I've got to say, I type in Veritas RS3, hit images, and the first picture is Tony, you and Albor's in the passenger seat of this car on supercars.net.
There, you're right. I just found it too.
That is so funny.
It looks like an angry fish from the front. All I remember is all you could smell was fumes, and it was just honestly, it's kind of like, you know, you look at a Ferrari Monza SB2 now, and this kind of looks like that. You know, it's one of those types of cars with different cockpit for the passenger and the driver, but fuck, it was cool. Hey, like everywhere we went, people just could not stop looking at it. And even today, I reckon if you saw this thing on the road, it would look sensational. It was one of the coolest looking cars I think I've ever seen.
Remember how long it was, and where Carl wanted us to shoot was winding up to that fucking grotto up in the cliffs. And I believe we were doing it at night, part of the filming, and it was hair-raising driving that thing around those tight bends. And you remember the gear shift? You had to put your hand under, like to the right over to the left, and under the cowling, it was the shifter. You couldn't even see the shifter. That's the maddest thing. And again, that also was powered by an M5
V10.
I don't know what happened to those guys, but that was a significant car because that company, Veritas, were the first German automotive company to build a Formula One car in Germany. So that was the first German Formula One manufacturer coming back after something like 60 years or something. Quite phenomenal. And I don't know what's happened to those guys. We're still friends with Alex because Alex has a company in Germany that now builds carbon parts. I think he does BMW and Porsche.
Every once in a while, he sends me a reminder about that wheel just to make my day. He's a great guy, actually. But, yeah, so we drove the Veritas. That was definitely an experience and a half. But we were in Italy for something else, weren't we? I can't remember, Tony. What were we doing in Italy?
No, the way the trip panned out is we had to keep crisscrossing borders because none of it was in sequence properly because of some cancellations. Like, we never got to drive the Apollo, the Gumpert Apollo, because that was, and the Aspid was crashed a week before we got there because that was supposed to be in Barcelona, and there was a whole bunch of changes to the itinerary. But the next one was TechArt.
TechArt.
I mean, none of us had really heard of these German tuners, really. I mean, but it's such huge business in Germany, tuning these already mega fast cars like the GT.
TechArt's massive now.
It's huge. And these guys, I got to say, our boys, we were there when these companies were pretty much in their infancy almost. Certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think TechArt was definitely known to the sort of hardcore Porsche enthusiasts, but certainly it wasn't like Gimbala, which I think was a much bigger brand at the time, and it's no longer existing now. But we went to TechArt to drive the then 997 GD2 RS. It was called the GD2 Street RS, I think. Do you remember? Yeah. Something like that. It was like it was Veyron levels of power in a rear-wheel drive Widowmaker. And I felt like I spent 2 hours trying to get it to 300. And I reckon at about 280, I could change direction in the front wheels and the car wouldn't move because the aero was so bad that it just had no front grip. And I thought, fuck, if something goes wrong here, there's not going to be much left of me except a really cool YouTube video. But
I was pumped up to the, like, that was a GT2 RS with, I don't know what they did to it, bigger turbos or whatever, but it apparently had 700 HP with 860 Newton meters. It was mega. And all I remember driving that car was the clutch was so friggin' heavy. Don't know if you remember.
Yeah. But you never drove you actually never drove the Cayman that they gave us, but that was a much better car.
The Cayman, man. I mean,
we could not get Tony to drive the fucking, he just could not give a fuck to drive the Cayman. But you know, the Carl said to us, our videographer said to us, let's get some drift shots, right? We're thinking, fuck, like, we can't drift an MX-5, like, let alone a fucking 700 horsepower tuned up car that, you know, goes 100% power to nothing. Anyway, the TechArt guys found us an airfield. Germany's full of airfields for obvious reasons. And Tony and I must have spent an hour trying to get one slide photo. I have one great photo of me drifting this TechArt Cayman, but the GD2 RS would just fucking snap every fucking time, right?
Yeah.
And Tobias, who I think he's running something in, what was his name? Tobias something. He follows me on Instagram now.
Is he still with TechArt?
He might be, actually. He actually sent me a message that is saying, where's that video? This is like 10 years later.
Tell him GFC hit.
Well, that was the thing. So we pumped out these amazing, I just guess you'd call them like almost like Instagram little 60-second videos that before Instagram even existed. And we were pumping out these things, and the audiences that were attracted to this stuff were huge. And it went viral. Every single one of these things went viral. But it's such a shame we didn't get 18 hours of footage actually translated. We really must do that one day and get that stuff, lost files or whatever you want to call it, and put it up.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff is literally unique, especially that GT Spano in Spain that we drove. I don't think even Top Gear had got into that.
No. Well, I mean, a lot of these cars no one else had driven. I've still never seen a proper video of a GD Street RS from TechArt.
Never.
It was the only car they had. So, you know, I think we didn't put these in perspective, but like the Arpt R8. The Arpt R8 was double the price of the normal R8.
It was like 600 grand or something. It was
That is incredible.
Yeah, that TechArt was close to a million. I pretty much, the GT Street RS was close to a million, if not 600,000 euro back in the day. And, you know, then I think we drove to the Novatek, which is another one I'd never heard of at the time, but they were experts in Ferrari and Maserati. And do you remember we got there and there was an actual SLS McLaren?
Yes, it was an SLR.
SLR,
yeah.
McLaren.
Yeah.
That was just sitting there. And I remember the price of that because we were really interested to know what it was. It was 150,000 euros. I don't know whether they're still that price.
God.
Yeah.
Today they're worth shit tons.
Yeah. It's a terrible car though, but anyway.
Now, yeah, about the I think you need to tell everyone about your experiences with the Novatek Scuderia 430.
Yeah, the F430 Scuderia Novatek. So it was a F430 Scuderia, which already is a pretty hairy car to drive. Yeah. And these guys, these mad German bastards, had twin supercharged it. And they gave us the car, like, yeah, you know, off you go. It was the first Ferrari I'd ever driven, actually. And it was yellow, which is ironic because I now have a yellow Ferrari and it looks kind of very similar. But it was the narrowest fucking roads I've ever seen in Europe. And it was wet and the edge of the road just peeled off. So you basically, if you made the tiniest mistake, you would die. And Carl kept saying, go faster. And I'm like, man, I don't know if I can go any faster. Like, I'm doing 160 in a fucking rural town in Germany in the wet in a car that is just completely fucking unstable. And I remember telling the guys at Novatek when I came back, I said, this car is not safe. It doesn't feel right. And they kind of laughed at me like, oh, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And that car crashed a week later. And there's a photo of it on the internet. If you Google a Novatek F430 Scuderia, it's a yellow Scuderia that's completely crushed by this crash. And it's on the exact same fucking road I was driving it a week prior.
Oh, so, yeah, because I took over and did some high-speed runs in that thing. And it was okay in a straight line. But the way Carl kept saying, can you go faster? Can you go faster? Well, I can if I fucking want to die, dude. But
all I'm hearing here is opportunities for me to have increased my equity while you guys were gone.
Yeah,
they're all just missed.
if you want to Google it, if you want to Google it, Google Novatek F430 crash, and the picture is on Wrecked Exotics. It's the exact same road we were on, and that is the exact same car we were driving literally a week after we drove it. And
by the way, that was €1 million back then.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that thing is destroyed.
Up until today, I've never driven a car that has shit scared me as much. That thing was just, it just wanted to fucking do exactly what that picture looks like it's done. I was glad to give that fucking car back, I tell you. I was sweating. I was actually sweating by the time I got out of it. It was like a cold German day and I was completely covered in sweat.
They were really nice guys. They took us to dinner and paid, thankfully, because we didn't have any money. But another one where when someone would leave the table to pay on the credit card, we were just rubbing our hands together thinking, thank fuck.
If it wasn't for that experience and the sound of that car, though, I mean, I've got a Novatek exhaust now on the Speciale, and I've got to tell you, that brand is amazing. What they do is sensational. They really put in a lot of effort into their work.
Next level engineering, and that workshop was amazing. And there were some other really cool cars there, but time was tight, and we literally had planned one day with that car. And I think we got some really good shots because we had Jan, that really cool photographer, friend of Carl's, shooting the stills, and there were some special shots with that car, you know?
There were. And they actually got the shots off us because we shot it in this beautiful German town.
Yeah, with those yellow flowers. But yeah, then we that night, it was a Sunday night, and we got on Ryanair. Well, fuck me. If anyone wants a review of Ryanair, I'll give it to you in one word.
Let me just give some context to this. I had booked the wrong flight. So we were in one German town and I misunderstood the name and I booked a flight from another German town that sounded somewhat similar to get us to Spain, I think, where we were going.
Yeah.
And so we had to drive. It was like 800 kilometers away or something.
Yeah.
And thankfully, in Germany, you could do that in about 4 hours or 5 hours. And we just got into the car and, fuck, we've got to go. We drove all the way out to this other German town. The airport was closed. We had nowhere to stay, so we actually slept in the car.
Fucking car, yeah, and it was fucking freezing, Paul. And
unbelievable.
I had made the mistake. They were all in the car, and I'd made the mistake saying, I'm not fucking getting into that fucking thing. That was it still the Focus, I think?
Okay, I think it was, yeah.
I came out about 2 a.m., literally freezing in a T-shirt, lying on the bench in the airport, Like, into the car, and all I saw was just, you know, condensation. And I thought, oh no.
It's like a scene from the Titanic, yeah. The hand mark.
We had no sleep. Like, it was literally a no sleep. And then in the morning, we were trying to get the Ryanair, and I think we had not accounted for about 4 different bags of camera gear and stuff. And those fuckers hit us up for about 800 euros.
Oh, it was 1,800 euros, dude.
Of extra baggage. And that literally cleaned our credit cards out there and then. Like,
that was the food money for the rest of the trip. We had to give it to Ryanair.
And I remember walking down the line saying, do not fucking fly these fuckers. And I literally got escorted out of the airport. Like, I was furious.
Oh, I remember that so clearly.
I've never flown them again, the fuckers.
It was like, you know, like when your dad embarrasses you and he's like, we're turning everywhere we went.
The crazy granddad.
Oh, fuck, that was hilarious.
So we ended up getting there, and those people couldn't have been nicer. And this was Albo, tell everyone what that car was about. It was the first Spanish supercar.
We went to Valencia, right? Is that where we went? I think, we went to Valencia. So we went to Valencia. They picked us up from the airport. It took us to this amazing hotel, which they paid for, which, again, like Tony said, was the best thing ever. And then, the next day we're going to drive. The company was called GTA, and the car was called Spano. You'll still see it show up in Geneva every once in a while. And we went there the next day. We're expecting something like Wiesmann, which was a really high-tech professional outfit. What we actually found was like a shed. There were the nicest guys, but this car literally was running Windows 95 or Windows XP, I can't remember. And you couldn't turn it on until Windows booted up. So you'd have to boot up Windows and wait for Windows to show up before the rest of it. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. It was literally running Windows to work. And we'd hired a Holden Zafira, an Opel Zafira, as our video car. And then we went to the Valencia MotoGP circuit. What's that circuit called?
MotoGP was Ricardo Tummo.
Right. Yeah, that's what we were filming. We were filming at that track. And we had an audience, man. People were taking photos with us. Do you remember them?
Massive audience.
I think people thought we were famous.
Well, they brought the car, like, full race engineering team and rolled off the back of the truck. And I remember, you know, none of us had driven that track before, obviously, and it was quite tight. And this was a V10 powered Viper engine in the back, so mid-engine supercar. And I remember George getting in, and you know they had telematics and all that kind of stuff on the car. And I thought I need to put in a decent lap time here. So we take off down the straight, and I've turned to turn 1, and George says, "Oh, the door's not closed." I said, "What the fuck do you mean the door's not closed?" He said, "Hold the fucking door closed and shoot with the other hand." But it was. And then you had a drive, and it was slow for you,
it wasn't slow for me. It was just shit and slow in general. The car, the reason I bring up the Holden Zafira is because when we were filming down the straight at the racetrack, the cameraman and his assistant in the Holden would put their foot down so that they could get some space from us, and then I would go flat to the accelerator, and I couldn't catch the Zafira. That's how fucking slow the car was, dude. It was fucked. It kept going into lip mode. You could smell the fuel. I thought it was going to catch on fire at any moment. It was one of the shittest cars I have ever driven.
From memory, and they had to refuel on track.
It was Spain's first supercar, but I suspect it may be one of their last as well.
I'm checking the specs here. The version they released in 2015, so the one that you guys drove was an 8.4-litre supercharged Viper V10. Then they released in 2015 an 8-litre twin-turbocharged Viper V10 that was making 690 kilowatts of power.
That must be 69 because it wasn't catching that fucking Zafira very well.
I kept telling everyone that, the fucking car's fast. It's rated at 2.9 0 to 100.
No, man. Maybe I don't know. It was definitely in lint mode for me because it would not fucking accelerate. It was it's a cool looking car though, I gotta say. It was a really good looking car.
Yeah. Very cool. And then it was on to, so we were kind of finished with all these sort of unique sort of one off type manufacturers, and then we got back onto Lamborghini, because before that, Paul was on that trip, and we had a Super Leggera and a Spider. And this time we had two new, an LP564 and another Spider. And we got there, and of course there was Winkelmann there again with his entourage of supermodels. Nothing different with that guy. But and then we drove up to, you know, where I had lived as a kid, up in Aosta, which was like 300 Ks away. And I fucking remember we were literally fucking convoying at 250. With those cars, like we seemed to get there in like an hour and a half. And it was, we'd just driven 350 Ks, like we were like all out, right?
Yeah, man. It was, I just remember you going, oh, it's just further up. I felt like we were just being led into the woods, into the complete fucking ghost chase. And then somewhere along the line, Tony decided to stop to buy a belt from a factory diesel outlet. And I'm like, dude, you don't have time for this shit. He's like, no, it's cool. Let's just go check this place out. It makes any good handcrafted luxury Italian goods. And I was like, dude, it's not a fucking holiday. I think that's the first time we ever actually had an argument in our entire fucking years of knowing each other.
I do.
But anyway.
I do remember you bought, was that the previous thing where you bought sunglasses?
Oh, the world's yeah, they weren't the best.
I do remember those cars. We were literally chasing each other flat out in those switchbacks for about 30 Ks. It was just hardcore. And
yeah.
Amazing drive, put it that way, you know?
It was an amazing drive. And then we actually we drove them to my uncle's house. Do you remember?
Yeah,
my uncle lives in Milan.
That was either after the trip to Biella or before. Maybe before, actually.
Yeah.
You couldn't even, like, get down the drive. It was a really strange parking. But your uncle, yeah, owned a bunch of fucking carpet shops, did he?
Typical Persian.
That is so perfect.
Literally, my uncle owns a bunch of Persian.
Are they all closing down as well?
Closed down and moved between each other, I think, yeah.
I'll tell you what, he had a fucking mega big apartment on the top floor, and there was five of us on his floor in sleeping bags, wherever the fuck they're on. And he was the nicest freaking guy, because in the morning he went out and bought all this salami and rolls and deli. So we were living like kings for 24 hours before back into supercars living in poverty.
we were leaving Milan to go to Sweden, weren't we? We were going to go drive the Koenigsegg. Yeah. And I think I was having a shower, like it's like hot water, you know, like when you pour, hot water is like a luxury. And I remember Tony yelling outside going, they've cancelled the Koenigsegg. And I was like, well, what the fuck do you mean they've cancelled? Because it's not there. It's not available anymore. And I was like, well, tell them, fuck, we're coming to drive it. I don't care what. We've come all the way from Australia to drive the fucking Koenigsegg. That was one of the highlights of the whole trip.
I remember calling it, and I think I was, I don't know who I was speaking to. I think I was speaking to Christian von Koenig's wife, Haldora. And I said to her, I said, look, because this was desperation for us. Like this, you know, we'd spent $6,500 just in cash. And we were, you know, basically we'd spent like $2,000 on airfares just to get up to Sweden. And I said to her, I rang her back and I said, look, there's got to be a way to do this. Otherwise, you're just going to have to pay us the $6,000 that it's cost. I literally said that to her. I was so desperate. Anyway, look, she called back. I think we'd actually decided, we had a vote, I remember, in Italy, and we decided, yep, let's fucking go there and try and make this happen. And I remember being in some like a really expensive friggin', it was like a pension. It was just one room with the five of us sleeping again. It was really poverty, but I remember it was like 280 euros, which is fucking.
It wasn't euros, man. It was whatever the Norwegians used at the time. I don't know what it was. But it was fucking expensive, and the food was dreadful, I gotta say. Oh, yeah. It was so bad. And anyway, we drove in to go and see Koenigsegg.
We got a call the next morning, and someone came and running and said, oh, it's Christian von Koenig's wife. And she said, look, I have a car for you. So all I can say is it does work if you're pushy in some circumstances.
If you blackmail people.
And, yeah, we got a ferry from Copenhagen over to Sweden, and it was about a 45-minute drive. Again, up to what was the place called?
I can't remember, but we actually went to the Koenigsegg factory, did a full tour, filmed the whole thing. Again, the very first people in the world to ever be able to film the Koenigsegg factory. It depresses me now to think about the fact that this footage never saw the light of day. It's pretty bad.
Proper sit down with Christian telling us about, we went to it, we filmed every station working on that car, and he was promoting the fact that that car had got the Nürburgring or the Nardo test track speed record, I think, of 380 k's an hour, was what that CCX had done on that test track at Nardo. Is it Nardo, guys? Like that?
Yeah,
I think it was Nardo. Yeah, that's their test track.
Yeah. So, but it wasn't just that. It was the whole, basically, where they tested their cars. This airport runway thing was like part of an original Swedish Air Force base called the Ghost Squadron. And if you notice on every Koenigsegg, even today, there's a little white ghost.
Oh, that's right.
On the back of the back screen, and that is in recognition of where the test track is at the Ghost Squadron, and that was a pretty amazing thing. And I remember that car doing 300 k's an hour within 1.5 kilometer standing start. Fucking amazing. And you remember starting that car? You had to have your fingers in a certain position, or it wouldn't access the ignition system.
Yeah. I just, you know, Koenigsegg now is, back then you got to remember that Koenigsegg was known, but no one really gave a shit. It was just one of those, you know, another one of those supercar brands that everyone sort of anticipated would eventually disappear. But now they're making a lot of cars now, and they're sort of competing in the really hypercar market pretty well. And
yeah,
I mean, I feel like they've overtaken very much Pagani and a few other guys are where they used to be. And Christian von Koenigsegg was the nicest guy. He was such a nice guy, and he took so much time for us. And when I saw him again at Geneva last year, when we were all there together, I actually said hi to him and I reminded him about that trip, and he actually remembered. And I said, "Oh, you know, you guys should come around and do it again." And I thought, "Fuck, we will."
Oh man,
you know, we should.
We definitely should. Those invites, and it just shows you that we tried to do the right thing. I just wish we had that footage that we could actually produce. And it's the only sort of thing we've never come through with. I still feel disappointed about that. It was a fantastic trip, and we had this footage, and it was almost like a TV program that just followed people. We just wanted the cameras left rolling, right? Because there was so much interesting stuff that happened whilst we were going there and whilst we were getting there, and the people we met on the way. It's what those trips are all about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, how long were we away? We were sponsored by Etihad.
Yeah.
And we had business class trips there if there were seats available.
Well, most of us did. I think
George was sitting in economy.
Nice of you guys to offer up a seat.
Oh, you know what we forgot to talk about, Tony, and I sort of hinted at this in the first Full Throttle trip, but in Italy, George was begging me to drive the Lambo. He'd never driven a Lambo, and he wanted his chance to be on camera. I think he thought he was a YouTube sensation in the making.
Yeah.
And he was desperate that he could do a little piece to camera for his own little YouTube channel. So I finally said, "Oh, fuck it, all right, sit in the car and do your thing." What, you know? And we came up to this toll to pay, and with the Lambos, as is the case here in Australia, you can't, like, I have to basically get out of the car to get ticket out of a parking meter. It just doesn't work. But with that toll, you actually have to give people money, and he just couldn't get close enough. So anyway, I actually got out of the car to come pay the toll as we got closer to it, and I'm standing there with my euro in hand, handing it over to this Italian lady, and George is so excited by the chance that he's getting to drive a Lambo, he actually ran me over. He ran over the back of my left foot.
I couldn't walk.
He literally damaged my Achilles heel. I needed about 6 months of physiotherapy so I could walk normally again, because this motherfucker ran over my foot. Like,
it was the funniest fucking thing. Saying, "Oh, my leg's a little bit sore." Like, really? Yeah, my leg's getting sore and sore.
The moral of the story is, don't let the cameraman ever drive the fucking car, because they literally run you over. That's what he did. He literally ran me over. And he didn't even, I don't think to this day he ever said sorry. He was too excited. That was the end of his YouTube career.
Well, Tony, I actually noticed you uploaded to Facebook the other day, like a teaser video, the 7-minute video.
That's the
what was footage. That? Really?
It was a teaser footage that we had ready for the guide.
I'm going to see that. I hadn't noticed you'd done that too. Yeah. I'm going to have a look at that.
To Universal Pictures.
We need to – can we embed that in this podcast article?
Yeah.
Yeah,
just so you can go to the site and look at it.
I will do that, actually. I will do that. Oh, wow, look at that footage. That looks great. I will definitely embed that.
Can I just say, I spent 25 minutes on the phone with Tony the other day describing to him how to upload an image to Google Drive. How the fuck, Tony, did you upload a video from probably a DVD to the internet?
Sometimes I amaze myself.
Fuck, look, that video just makes me smile looking at it. Hey, like, it's fuck, you look like you're actually possibly not dead in these videos, Tony. fucking hilarious.
And I hope it's not the end of those trips, because it wasn't just driving the cars, it was meeting people like Christian and talking about what they're really doing and the amazing passion and investment that goes into these companies. And TechArt's the same, and Arpt, and just to give you an idea, I did look up Arpt a few years ago, and they were turning over nearly $1 billion a year in tuning.
They're massive now.
It's absolutely enormous, and a lot of them have got offices places all around the world, and it's obviously really big business, not bigger than Germany anywhere, because Germans, they just love going freaking quickly, and their whole that whole idea of de-restricted autobahns is, and I fear that might disappear. That's probably another project.
No, you remember when they tried to do that, the Germans basically protested. In Germany, you're still allowed to protest, unlike Australia. And they basically, they shut that thing down and said, no, you won't be removing the de-restrictions.
But do you think that'll survive?
Look, at the end of the day, as the population increases, it actually becomes almost impossible to actually do stupid speeds anyway. It's just not safe. There's so many cars on the road in those limited stretches of unlimited speed that, I don't know, I just don't know that you could really realistically keep having those down the track.
That's true, Paul. But having said that, I've always said that, if you want a window into how to drive at high speed safely, if Germany is the absolute epitome of good manners. There's no aggro on the road like there is here.
Well, Tony, as well, it's not so much that, it's knowing how to behave on the road, because you sent me through a video the other day of Shmee in his Ford GT doing 200 miles an hour. Yeah. And there was one scene in particular where a car pulled out and he was doing probably close to 300 kilometers an hour at that point. And he had to jump hard onto the brakes. But this car, the second it saw that he was coming, it pulled straight back in.
Yeah.
In Australia, can you imagine that? The person would sit there knowing that you're approaching them just to prove a point, not understanding that you could obliterate their car if you hit them at 300 kilometres an hour.
I looked into this a little bit. Apparently, you're not allowed to overtake. Let's put the scene, whereas the left-hand lane in Germany is the fast lane, the opposite to Australia. And you're not allowed to overtake on the right. So that person has to move over for you to be able to overtake, which saves any disasters. And apparently it's not just a civil offence, it's a criminal offence to not do that.
Well, it makes perfect sense. And you'll notice actually quite a few Audi products and Volkswagen products in Australia, if you drive them with radar cruise control on, if you try and undertake a vehicle, it will actually prevent you from doing that. It comes up with a little thing saying that there's a car there. You have to manually tap the throttle for it to then pass that vehicle. And that's a hangover from that law in Germany where it is illegal to undertake.
Yeah. And even on the Nürburgring, if you've been... how many of you have driven laps around there? Again, you are not allowed to overtake on the right. You have to wait till that person moves over. And any accidents that generally happen are a result of foreigners not doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually quite a nerve-wracking place, because your friend, Mr. Simmons, who runs RSR, he was kind enough to take me for hot laps and then do a lead follow.
Is that not the best thing you could ever do?
Man, it was wet and damp. And then he tells me just as he scans the thing, we're in an M3 sedan, tells me just as he scans the pass to get on, he says, I've just been told there's a fuel spill on the track, but I'm not sure where it is. And he leaves at warp speed, and I thought, well, fuck, I'm going to die today because this guy's driving like a maniac and he doesn't know where the fuel spill is. But it's a beautiful way to learn how to drive properly over there, because when we did the lead follow, he said to me, don't look out your mirror, I'll look out for other cars. And it's nerve-wracking because you think you're going fast and then all of a sudden someone will come up on you in a car without an interior and a roll cage and they weren't there a second ago. And
in,
then
in
they
your
are
case, Paul, someone's going to come up behind you in a van.
But, yeah, it is extremely nerve-wracking. Those tourist days are just you would not want to be risking a very fancy car on a tourist day.
The only way to do it is whenever we've been over there, Paul, and you probably have the same thing, Ron gives us usually a Megane RS or whatever got at the moment. He might have i30Ns now, I don't know. But that is the only way to learn how to drive the ring.
Absolutely.
And go out there with him to learn the track too, or one of his instructors. And it's not actually that expensive, but I can tell you, if you want to enjoy the Nürburgring, go out in one of his cars that are prepped for the ring.
And also, don't go out in what you think you need to go out in, because the first thing you will do when you get there is go, all right, line me up a Porsche or a Ferrari. You don't need to go out in that. You literally need to go out in a front-wheel drive car like a Megane RS or an i30N and learn the track, because it is fucking terrifying. And even if you've played it back-to-back on Xbox or PlayStation or iRacing, whatever, it is so different in real life.
Yeah, there's like 17 different surfaces on that track.
Yeah, and weather zones. Yeah. Some parts are wet, some are dry. Yeah. You know, it is an incredible spot.
But having said that, it is frightening, but it's also exhilarating. That place. But that's just Germany in general. I just think there's a lot to be learned from driving in Germany, and I kind of feel that Australians and other people from other countries that do have low speed limits, it's really dangerous for those people to be doing 200 plus. They're
fucking
used to it.
Yeah, absolutely. The people struggle here doing 100, and they still manage to somehow kill themselves.
Do you remember? I wrote a story a couple of years ago. It was called "I did 320 kilometers an hour on a public road and didn't die."
Elbos, I think you've written that story four times now.
And it absolutely went viral. And oh man, the amount of crap I got for that. People messaging me saying, "Oh, you know, if my son dies in a car accident because he's read that and got encouragement, you know, you're to blame for it." I'm like, I'm really not actually.
Fuck me dead.
What I'm pointing out is that in some countries, they have this idea where they realize that going 10Ks over doesn't kill you. And I just think in Australia, man, people are so brainwashed. It's crazy. You just can't have an argument about speed with a normal person because they just think you're a fucking lunatic.
Well, also in Germany, and no one's suggesting you drive 300 kilometers an hour down a main street near a school. In Germany, the speeding fines are double in residential areas. So if you're speeding on an autobahn, like not on a de-restricted section, the fines are X. But if you do the same speed over in a residential area, it's double the fine. Yeah. So that's actually logical because you're less likely to be able to kill someone or have a serious accident on the freeway section as you will in a residential area.
But the other thing is in Germany, the tolerance, I think, is 25 kilometers an hour on the highway. So if it's a 130, which is, I think, what most of the autobahns are, 120, you can go up to 140 easily and not get a ticket, which is pretty reasonable, right? Like 25 over is a reasonable amount over. And here in Queensland, you know, in Victoria, it's like 5Ks. You're fucked. You go 105 in a 100 zone and that's it. You get a ticket.
That's assuming you're allowed outside to drive your car beyond the 5 kilometer zone.
But guys, I think that whole thing, and it pains me, it's just about culture in Australia.
That's right. It is. That's true.
Why people don't have a problem with someone overtaking you. Like I just, in Germany, you know, even if, and we drive over there quite a lot for work or used to, and you know, we regularly travel at 200 plus. And if someone's coming up behind you, you don't even think, you just move over.
Yeah, that's
it's just not even an issue. But over here, it seems to be a really big issue to allow someone to pass you. And you know, the whole adage of, you know, keep left and less overtake, it doesn't seem to even apply. And there's no punishment
at all.
The thing that really annoys me, and I guess this really isn't people's fault because they've just grown up in this speed kills culture, is when you're doing a long distance trip in Australia and there's these, you know, overtaking lanes every like 20 kilometers, and you've got this guy in front of you who's trying to overtake another guy, and it's 100 zone, and the guy will not go 100K over to overtake the other guy, and they just sit there next to each other like two fucking snails trying to overtake, because the guy is petrified that if he goes 105 to do this, he's going to get a ticket.
Yeah,
because there will probably be a police officer waiting there, which is what happened to me once when I was in a legal overtaking area. They sat there. I'm like, are you guys fucking mad? Yeah. Anyway, now we're going to the next sort of episodes of these Founders podcasts, where we're actually going to be interviewing some of the people that, we've sort of dealt with over the years, and I think we're going to call it Founders and Friends, so you'll be able to sort of hear from some interesting people. We also want your feedback. Let us know with the content of these podcasts whether you enjoy them, and also the swearing. I know a lot of you have said you don't mind it, but let us know what your thoughts are. Send us through an email to podcast@carexpert.com.au.
I think before we go, it's worth pointing out, I think we said we were going to talk about it, why the content from this stuff never came out.
Yes.
I think, look, unfortunately, I guess we went over there without really a concrete plan as to what we were going to do with this footage. As I said, the idea originally was to make a DVD. We were going to sell the rights to things. And then when we got back, we were actually so broke that when the guy who shot the footage asked for more money to do the editing, we actually couldn't pay him. I think it was only a couple of grand. I think it was like $4,000. I think that's what he asked for. We actually didn't have the money, and the footage just sat there. And then I think we had a CEO put in place who just didn't really value the footage at all. Actually, you love this bit. I offered that guy who didn't do the edits my equity. I offered him 2% of Car Advice if he would edit the footage, and he didn't. And I think that would have to go down as the costliest mistake anyone I think could make, because that 2% would have been, you know, would have been worth in the millions, well and truly. And he didn't do it. And I sort of remind him of that every time I speak to him, just because that footage could still have been, I think it would have slightly changed our trajectory if he'd actually put it all together, Tony. What do you think?
Yeah, 100%, because it was, a lot of it was unique, and it was back in the day when, you know, Top Gear was starting to fire. And like I said, we had, you know, that Bugatti, the year before that Bugatti factory tour, I don't think Top Gear, I don't think anyone had ever been in there. All that stuff was unique, and I think people would have appreciated it, and maybe it would have spawned a whole supercar series back when there wasn't any. So
well, you never know, but I agree. I think it's, it was before YouTube was really a thing, and, you know, you never know. Never know what could have happened. Yeah. It could have gone the opposite way, you know.
Well, I think it's important that the people that invest in this business have such passion, and, you know, it's anything you can do to show people what other people are doing throughout the world is a good thing for me. And
yeah.
It's so interesting, right? I mean, they're all got their uniqueness. They're all quite eccentric, a lot of these people. Yeah. And, they have like-minded interests. We all love cars, and it's just great to sort of be able to have a drive in there. We tried to get Pagani. I remember that got cancelled at the last minute, or something about that you wouldn't be able to drive it back then. They'd need a test driver to be with you and all that sort of stuff. And I think we were working way through that. That didn't happen. So there was some still unfinished business probably that we need to go and revisit.
Yeah, see how much equity Car Expert we could lose in the process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, keep me posted. Well, I'm happy to accept any donations.
Yeah.
All right, we'll wrap it there. Thank you, guys. Let us know your feedback, and we will all chat to you next week when we have our first Founders and Friends interview thing lined up.
Thanks, guys. Hey, guys.